It started out to be an ordinary day in the life of the apostles. They woke up in Bethany. They had been in Jericho. They are with Jesus. They are entering into Jerusalem. But this day would be more significant than they imagined. It would be the beginning of the final week of their master on the earth. It would be the beginning of what we call the Passion Week, what our forefathers called the Great Week. Jesus would, from that moment on, in the next series of events, go to the cross outside of Jerusalem.
Make a connection. Make a connection at the foot of the cross. Cast your burdens on His wood. Make a connection. A connection.
And welcome to The Connection with Skip Heitzig, as today we continue our series, The Passion of Christ. Do you remember in the final chapter of the Lord of the Rings trilogy when Aragorn made his dramatic entrance into the White City? He arrived just in time to rescue it from the evil forces that were causing destruction. Well, when Israel's promised king made his entrance, it was less dramatic. And Skip explains in today's study that this king didn't come as a conqueror, but as a sacrifice. But before we begin today, I want to remind you that if you'd like to enjoy even more in your Bible study, you can watch over 2,000 teachings by Skip on various topics when you visit connectiononline.org. You can also listen to his entire teaching library on the go when you download the free Skip Heitzig mobile app. We've heard from many listeners about how this ministry has helped them stay connected with God and His Word. And you can join us as we continue to share the gospel in even more places around the world. Visit connectiononline.org/give to financially partner with us. And if this ministry is making a difference in your life, we'd love to know. You can email us at mystory@connectiononline.org or write to us at P.O. Box 95707, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 87199. Yeah, there are some who believe that the cross was God's plan B. But as we trace Jesus' deliberate steps toward Jerusalem, we find that nothing is out of God's control. Stay tuned to hear more today.
Make a connection. Make a connection at the foot of the cross. Cast your burdens on His word. Make a connection.
The title of our teaching today is The Day God Rode a Donkey. We'll be in Luke chapter 19. So as you find that spot in your Bible, let's join Skip Heitzig.
In Luke chapter 19, verse 28 is where we're going to begin. It started out to be an ordinary day in the life of the apostles. They woke up in Bethany. They had been in Jericho. They are with Jesus. They are entering into Jerusalem. But this day would be more significant than they imagined. It would be the beginning of the final week of their master on the earth. It would be the beginning of what we call the Passion Week, what our forefathers called the Great Week. Jesus would, from that moment on, in the next series of events, go to the cross outside of Jerusalem. The date was significant. The date, according to the Jewish calendar, was the 10th of Nisan. The 10th of Nisan. It was a particularly important day because on the 10th of Nisan, during the Passover season, the lambs were received into the Jewish households to be kept and nurtured and then killed on the 14th for the Passover. It was not a haphazard set of events this week. It was on God's timetable, exactly planned. I've always loved what John Nelson Darby once said. He was an English clergyman. He said, God's ways are behind the scenes, but God directs all of the scenes that He is behind. That's what He's doing here. Now, from a human perspective, this day was sort of a tragedy. It was the straw that broke the camel's back, so to speak. It was the day, finally, the rulers in Jerusalem said, that's it. He's going to die. We've had enough of this guy. And the cross was plainly in view after this day. But from a divine standpoint, in God's timetable. It was so carefully engineered because it would mean that Jesus would go to the cross to save people from their sin. It's sort of like Joseph, who said to his brothers after they betrayed him, "I know that you meant this for evil, but God meant it for good, to save many people alive as it is this day." Many years ago, a family in Scotland named the Clarks had a dream. Their dream was to come to America. The father always wanted to save up enough money to put his family on a ship and sail them across the seas and give them a better life. So he worked and he saved, and finally, he saved up enough money to send he and his wife and their 9 children on a ship across the seas to America. They secured passports, they made reservations on the ship, but 7 days before the ship was to cut loose from the dock, their little boy was bitten by a dog. The doctor came and sewed the boy up. They still had a week before they were to leave. The doctor imposed a quarantine on that family for 14 days. They couldn't go anywhere. They couldn't leave town. The father was so angry at God and so angry at his son, they missed their opportunity to come to America on that great ship. And so the day that that ship left the dock, the father stomped down there and had tears in his eyes as it left, was mad at God, was mad at his son. And then 5 days later, the world heard the tragic news that the unsinkable Titanic sunk. Hundreds of lives were lost, and that was the ship they had reservations for. When the father heard that, he rushed home, put his arms around his son, and thanked him for getting bit by a dog and saving their lives, and thanked God for turning what seemed to be a tragedy into such a great blessing. God will take this event that turns out to be, from a human perspective, a tragedy and turns it into a worldwide blessing. And there are times when we are so disappointed with the way things happen in life, not knowing that perhaps that disappointment, that tragedy, is actually an appointment with destiny. This morning, I hope that you will be dazzled by God's sense of timing as we read this passage together. We want to take it in 3 chunks. First of all, the king, that is Jesus, enters the city. Let's begin back in verse 28. We'll read a few verses. When he had said this, he went on ahead, going up to Jerusalem. It came to pass when he drew near to Bethphage and Bethany at the mountain called Olivet that he sent 2 of his disciples, saying, "Go into the village opposite you, where as you enter you will find a colt tied on which no one has ever sat. Loose it and bring it here. And if anyone asks you, 'Why are you loosing it?' thus you shall say to him, 'Because the Lord has need of it.' So those who were sent went their way and found it just as he said to them. But as they were loosing the colt, the owners said, 'Why are you loosing the colt?' And they said, 'The Lord has need of him.'" You know, they follow directions. "And they brought him to Jesus, and they threw their own clothes on the colt, and they set Jesus on him. And as he went, many spread their clothes on the road." I mentioned the date was the 10th of the Jewish calendar, Nisan. According to our calendar, that would be April 6th, 32 AD. Jesus entered Jerusalem from the east. He had been in Jericho. He had gone from Jericho up to Bethany on Friday afternoon. Friday evening and all day Saturday, he spent at Bethany in the house of Lazarus, whom he had raised from the dead with his 2 sisters, Mary and Martha. He was resting there that part of the weekend with the disciples. Now it's the first day of the week. It's Sunday. It's the time when you can go back to work, and so people are flooding into Jerusalem at Passover. Jesus hikes up the hill, the Mount of Olives, from the backside, Bethany, and is now on top, They set him on a donkey, and he is presented now to the city. I mentioned it was the Passover season. Let me just paint a picture to you. Passover in Jerusalem was and still is packed, crowded full of people. The city swelled 5 times its normal size during Passover. Just to get a visual, you might want to picture Balloon Fiesta crowds in an area not much bigger than Old Town, swarming. Josephus mentioned that one of those early years, the Jews sacrificed 256,000 lambs. And according to the tradition, they would have a minimum of 10 people per lamb, since that's how the meal was eaten. So that means about 2.5 million people were crowded in and around Jerusalem, swarming with people. Preparations were made because it was the Passover. Roads were repaired so people could travel. Bridges were fortified. Tombs were painted white so that you could see them to stay away from them, lest you get defiled from the Passover celebration. All of this was going on at the Passover season. In verse 30 and 31, Jesus gives a very odd command. Coming up the Mount of Olives at Bethany, he says, "Now there's a village just opposite us, and there's a donkey there. Go get it. Bring it to me. Now, if the owners ask you, 'What are you doing with the donkey?' just say, 'The Lord has need of it,' and you'll be able to take it." It was an odd request, but you know, Jesus had made other odd orders in the past, and I think by this time the disciples, you know, just knew to flow with it. They may have remembered the time when Jesus said, as there were thousands of people out on a hillside, "Hey, bring those few loaves and fishes here. Let's have lunch." They're going, "Oh, come on. What are they among so many? Let me have them." He blessed them. He broke them. It fed thousands of people. Or the time when Jesus said to Peter, "Hey, Peter, let's go fishing." And he said, "Oh, come on, man. We fished all night. We've caught nothing." Of course, they caught so many fish, the nets were almost breaking. So by now, they learned, Jesus wants a donkey? We'll get him a donkey. Now, we don't know which disciples were sent or which disciples went. It could be any of the 12. I've always been fond of thinking it was one of the three executive assistants. You know, Jesus had Peter, James, and John. They were sort of on special missions. And so I've always pictured Peter and John going to get the donkey. And I can just hear them bantering back and forth. John would say, "Now let me do the talking here, Peter. You know, you get into trouble sometimes with your mouth. After all, I am the disciple that Jesus loved. I wrote that. And so I'll do the talking." And I can hear Peter saying, "No way. He said, 'Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah,' not John. So don't break rank, all right? I'll do the talking." At any rate, they got the donkey and brought it back. And as he went, verse 36, many spread their clothes on the road. You know, you've got to understand that this was a planned event, pretty obvious, because all of the details that Jesus said would happen, happened. There's going to be a donkey. He's going to be tied. It'll be a colt. It'll be a young donkey. Somebody's going to say, "What are you doing?" You tell them this, and you'll get it. And it happened exactly. Only omniscience could do that. It wasn't like Jesus said, "You know, my feet are tired. I'd love to have a donkey ride." This was a planned event. Remember last week I mentioned there were some 300 predictions in the Old Testament made about Jesus' first coming? This is one of them. This fulfills Zechariah chapter 9, verse 9. Let me read it to you. "Rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. Shout, daughter of Jerusalem. For look, your king comes to you, righteous, having salvation, gentle, and riding on a donkey, the colt, the foal of a donkey." William Barclay, in his fine commentary on this section, says, "When Jesus sat on that donkey, it was his deliberate claim to be the king." You see, kings rode donkeys in times of peace. They rode horses only in times of war. He's coming gentle. Your king comes to you on the foal of a donkey. What is interesting about this is Jesus walked everywhere he went. We never read of him riding a donkey. We never read of him making any kind of public demonstration ever before until right now. In John chapter 6, when they wanted to make him a king by force, he said, no way, and he just sort of slipped out of the crowd. When Jesus would heal people, and they're saying, man, I'm going to tell everybody, he'd say, don't tell anybody. Imagine how hard that was. Don't tell anyone. Because he didn't want it to be a premature celebration. Now is the time where he sits on a donkey, fulfilling Zechariah 9, and makes deliberately a public demonstration so everybody will see him. Interesting, Jesus comes into Jerusalem on the 10th of Nisan, the very day the lambs were received into the households of the Jews, the Lamb of God is received into the city, and Jesus allows it to be so. Now skip ahead for just a moment to verse 42. Notice something. He said, if you had known, even you, especially in this your day, the things that make for your peace, but now they are hidden from your eyes. And look at verse 44, the very end of it. He continues and said, because you did not know the time of your visitation. Now, I'd like you to listen very carefully to me in the next few moments. Put on your thinking caps. And my teacher always used to tell me that, because I never did. And when she wanted my attention, she said, put on your thinking caps and follow God's timetable for just a moment. I hope you will see exactly how precise God is in his timing, and you will step back and go, wow, I can trust him with anything. I can rest. I want you to keep a marker here and go back in the Old Testament to Daniel chapter 9. Daniel chapter 9. Daniel was the prophet who was given a prediction, a timetable, of the time when the Messiah would come to Israel. For the sake of time, brevity, look at verse 24 of Daniel 9. 70 weeks are determined for your people and for your holy city to finish the transgression, to make an end of sins, to make reconciliation for iniquity, to bring in everlasting righteousness, to seal up vision and prophecy, and to anoint the most holy. Know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the command to restore and build Jerusalem until Messiah the Prince, there will be 7 weeks and 62 weeks, it's a total of 69 weeks, the street shall be built again and the wall even in troublesome times. But after the 62 weeks, Messiah shall be cut off or killed. Karat is the Hebrew. But not for himself. And the people of the prince who is to come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary. The end of it shall be with a flood. Until the end of the war, desolations are determined. If anything, it's an interesting prophecy. And it's a prediction that from the issue of a certain command until the Messiah comes will be a period of 69 weeks. 7 and 62, 69. The prophecy begins in verse 24 by saying 70 weeks are determined. In Hebrew, it's Shebuim Shevim, 70 sevens, 70 periods of seven. Now, when it says 70 weeks, it can mean one of two things. It can refer to a week of days, or it can refer to a week of years, and the Jews referred to a week both ways. If it refers to just days, 70 weeks of days, that's only about 1 1/3 years. That's not enough time for all of the events predicted in verse 24 to be completed. That is why the consensus of scholars, both Jewish and Christians, concur that the prophecy speaks of weeks of years, since it's literally 70 sevens, 70 sets of 7 years. And that's why the Jewish commentary that I researched said 70 times 70 years. And the Mishnah refers to it as a week of years. The Revised Standard Version translates this verse 70 weeks of years, or 490 years altogether. Even the New Century Version, if you have a copy of that, says God has ordered 490 years for your people. Well, if that's true, that means that from the going forth of a certain commandment, verse 25, until the Messiah, the Prince, will be 483 years. That's how the prophecy would read. Six things would have to happen, notice in verse 24. Six things would have to happen in that period of time. Find my place. Finish the transgression, make an end of sin, reconciliation for iniquity, bring an everlasting righteousness, seal up vision and prophecy, and anoint the Most Holy. Perhaps the first three were fulfilled at the first coming of Jesus when he came to deal with sin, but the second three will be dealt with at his second coming. But verse 25 is what I want to zero in on. There's going to be a commandment, Daniel was told. From the day that commandment is given until the Messiah comes, the Messiah, the Prince, there'll be 483 years. After that, he will be killed. Not for himself. He'll be cut off. Now, there's three distinct periods. Let me briefly cover this. There's a period of 7 weeks, which is how many years? 49 years. And by the way, from the commandment, the day the commandment was given by Artaxerxes Longimanus in 445 BC, March 14th, it took, interestingly enough, exactly 49 years for the city of Jerusalem to be completed and its walls and its streets, the rebuilding process. 49 years, 7 weeks. But altogether, 483 years would be completed for the Messiah to come. I mentioned Artaxerxes. This is well documented. Artaxerxes I, called Longimanus, on March 14th, 445 BC, issued a commandment for the Jews to rebuild and restore the streets and the walls of the city of Jerusalem. So that means, starting at March 14th, 445 BC, it should be that 483 years after that, the Messiah would come. This interested a guy from Scotland Yard named Sir Robert Anderson, who was the head of investigative research, criminal investigation of Scotland Yard years ago. He wrote a book called The Coming Prince. He calculated from March 14th, 445 BC, 483 years to the exact day. 483 years would be 176,880 days. So he counted March 14th, 445 BC, and added 173,880 days, and guess what date he came to? April 6th, 32 AD, the 10th of Nisan, the very day Jesus said, "Hey guys, there's a village right across the Mount of Olives. There's a donkey waiting there for you. Loose him and bring him to me." And on that exact day, he sat on it, and the Messiah was offered as the prince to the nation of Israel.
Well, God's timing for Jesus' arrival was absolutely perfect. This plan wasn't a last-minute scheme by God to compensate for the unexpected. It was laid out so thoughtfully and lovingly before time even began. And now we can have the assurance that God has our lives under control as well. Well, we have to bring things to a close today. But before I tell you how to get a copy of today's teaching, here's a great resource for parents who want to get their kids excited about the Bible.
Get the very best of Skip Heitzig's resources with this month's Connection offer. For any amount donated to the Connection, we'll give you one of Skip's most popular books, How to Study the Bible and Enjoy It. If you've ever found the Bible confusing or hard to understand, and let's be honest, we've all been there, this book is just what you need. Skip will show you not only how to read and study the Bible, but also how to unlock its meaning and relevance for your life. On top of that, we'll send you the newest Skip's Tips, titled Say, Play, and Pray, perfect for the parent who's looking for a fun and creative way to teach their child about God. These resources will do more than just encourage and inspire. They'll show you how to practically and intentionally live out your relationship with Jesus. Place your order for any donation amount at 1-800-922-1888 or order online at connectiononline.org.
And as promised, if you'd like to order a copy or two of today's teaching, The Day God Rode a Donkey, just call us here at The Connection. That's 1-800-922-1888. Or visit connectiononline.org/radio. Each copy is available for just $6. And did this teaching sharpen your knowledge of God and His Word? Let us know about that when you email to mystory@connectiononline.org. Or when you write to us at P.O. Box 95707, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 87199. And we'll be back Monday to continue to follow the events of Jesus' final week on earth. So plan to join us then and have a great weekend, won't you? The Connection is a presentation of Connection Communications.
Make a connection. Make a connection at the foot of the cross.
Connecting you to God's never-changing truth in ever-changing times.